I also want to say one thing before we get into the sermon. My wife and I, we're not perfect people, and we don't have a perfect marriage, okay? So that's a good thing, right? Because we all struggle in relationship, and we all struggle in marriage. But may we be an encouragement this morning to each one of us, no matter what our marital status, as we are made in the image of God all together, and also the bride of Christ. We are the bride of Christ. And marriage is a picture of the bride and the bride's groom. And so everything we say today pretty much applies to everybody, whether you're married or not. And I think that's all I had to say, because now it's my wife's turn.
Thank you. Obviously, this is a huge topic. We could talk for a long, long time about it and get into deep discussions. Today, we're going to skim the surface on some things that in our study together this week and last that God brought to mind for us. So here are some words for you. So we've been talking in this season or this series on purity about how God created human beings for community, in relationship. He made us male and female to exist in the midst of community, and we thrive in the midst of community. We learned about four words for love. Cam brought those to us. If you remember, we talked about storge being the love that is between parents and children. We talked about philia, which is a love for your friends, for your peers, your community. Agape is that unconditional, sacrificial kind of love. And then the fourth being identity. And he said that our identity is not found in our hardware, which is the way that our bodies are put together, or in our software, which is our own perception of our gender and sexuality, but rather that our identity is found in the reality that together, both male and female, we are image bearers of God. We bear witness to God. And we bear witness to him in that we have an eternal destiny as spiritual beings. We bear witness to God in that we co-create in marriage and childbirth. And we bear witness to God in that we are moral beings who are called to act in godly ways. And today, Dan and I will look at one of the deepest, most intimate relationships in which God has designed community to thrive. And that's the relationship of marriage. We'll have a look in Genesis to see how marriage is designed by God to allow us to experience deep intimacy as physical, emotional, spiritual, and sexual beings. We'll have a look in Ephesians and see this picture of Christ's love for his bride and how our marriages can reflect that.
I was so tempted to come up here and go, "Marriage." Anybody who's seen Princess Bride? Marriage is what brings us together today. Well, it really does. But if you think about the example of how people cohabit in our culture, I'm sure we can all think of, whether in our family or with work friends or with neighbors, we've seen all kinds of ways that people cohabit. There's some people that are married. There's some people that are married as homosexuals. There are some people that are living together. And there's boyfriend, girlfriend. Although I always find that hard when they're like in their 60s. You know, the boyfriend is 60 or girlfriend is 60. That's tough for me to put together. There are people who are serial monogamists, right? They stay with a person and they move on to the next one for a while, then move on to the next one. And there's people who simply just sleep around, right? So there's lots of ways that our culture cohabits together. And there's lots of reasons for that, too. I once worked with a guy at the Burnaby School Board. I used to be on the landscaping, groundskeeping crew, mowed lawns for most of the time for the Burnaby School Board. And one of the guys was on our crew. He was a really good-looking guy. Like, he was one of these kind of Greek god sort of guys, with the dark hair and the dark skin and physique and the whole nine yards.
Tasso.
Yeah, exactly. Tasso. It wasn't Tasso, but anyway. This guy was really interesting. Like, we used to drive around in a club cab truck, right? There were six guys on the crew, and we drive around in this truck with a bunch of lawnmowers on the back. And on a rainy day, you had to sit in the truck and eat your lunch, right? Because we couldn't go into the school. We'd have to sit out in our truck. Well, this guy would talk for an hour. It was only a half-hour lunch break. But he talked for an hour about his sexual conquests And that's all he talked about. And it was this girl last night, and it was different than the other one the other night, and this, and he went on and on. And I'm like, really? Come on, really? And he just went on and on and on about it. He was talking, though, with us one day. He said, you know, I'm going to have to consider moving. We went, well, why? He goes, well, I walk down the street, and I keep bumping into all of these women that I've had sex with, and it's getting awkward. And I'm like, seriously? Are you kidding me? I was a young married guy at the time, and I didn't really know how to respond to him. But I knew what he was doing was really destructive and really hurtful, both to him and to all of these women. He lived his life this way because he thought that marriage was outdated, confining, and boring. Why get married when you can sleep with whoever you want?
So we're coming at marriage with a vastly different view today. This May, Dan and I will have been married for 32 years. Woo-hoo! 30 of them blissful.
Hey, what do you mean?
It's been our experience that marriage is definitely not outdated. It's not confining. It's not boring. In fact, it's many, many other things. It's interesting. It's challenging. It's rewarding. It's awesome. Look at this.
Please. If I had a chance to talk to my old workmate today, I know for a fact that I would base my conversation with him about why marriage on the following three things. I would say to him, why marriage? I'll tell you why. Because marriage helps us with the image of God. Because marriage is the way that God teaches us about leaving and cleaving to somebody. And because God made each one of us to be intimate human beings.
So let's dive into the first one. Why marriage? Because of the image of God. God created mankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Genesis 1:27. And in the study guide last week, we looked at a number of passages that emphasize the various traits of God seen in maleness and in femaleness. Imagine the world of just female. Yeah, let that sit for a minute. I know, some of us are shaking our heads trying to imagine that. Now, the women would be reflecting the image of God, because we all do. But it's kind of like a two-dimensional picture. We can see the shape, the form, it's kind of there. But when God created male and female, it's like a three-dimensional picture. There's a fullness to it. There's a depth to it. It's complete. This is what God designed. Both male and female, bearing the image of God. And if you focus in for a moment on one of the characteristics of God, imagine his love. Think of a way that God's love has been expressed to you from a male, maybe a brother or a father or a close friend. Now, if love is being expressed to you by a female in your life, your mom or your sister or a close friend, there's probably a difference in the way that that love is expressed. They're both valid. They're both awesome. But together, God allows us to experience the fullness of him and a full reflection of his love in maleness and femaleness. Together, male and female in our community bear the image of God. And we can also more fully grasp the mystery of Christ's relationship for his bride, the church, when we view marriage, wife and husband, male and female. Marriage gives us an earthly picture of our relationship as a community loved by Christ. So if you have a Bible, can you open it just now to Ephesians 5, kind of 5 and 6 sort of framework, looking specifically at the passage that was read earlier about wives and husbands. But there's also two other little chunks there in verse 6. One's on children and parents, or chapter 6, pardon me, children and parents and slaves and masters. And if our great professor friend Scott Hagley were here today, he would probably geek out a little bit on this, and he would want to point out how cool it is that actually the literary structure that Paul used in this emphasizes the point. So there's 10 verses that speak about husband and wives, and then there's 10 verses afterwards that speak about children and parents, and then slaves and masters, so more weight is given to the husbands and wives discussion. But right smack dab in the middle is that awesome verse in 32 that says, "This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church." This is called the center member, or the hinge point in this chiastic structure that Paul used in his writing. Okay, enough geeking out. So, simply put, Paul stresses for us that we are more able to fully understand Christ and his love for the church, his deep, sacrificial, redeeming love for the church, his bride, when we understand and value biblical marriage. What we think about marriage matters.
Those who are married bear witness to the reality of who God is and live as a faithful presence in the midst of a culture who has absolutely no clue about Christian marriage. Therefore, two becoming one reflects the very nature of Christ and the church. Within the life and interaction in godly Christian marriages, you can actually get a glimpse of the love of Christ for his bride, the church. And that's really important. We need godly marriages so that we can glimpse a little bit about that love. When you watch an older Christian married couple who love each other, what do you see? Think of an older, older than us, come on. Do you see wrinkly old people? Or do you see beauty? Do you see time-tested commitment and intimacy and deep love of two people who've come together in one flesh? This relationship that has had a chance to grow so far beyond attraction that it's absolutely awesome. There's so much grace. There's so much love. It reflects God's timeless love for us. It gives us a picture of the grace that we all long for and what God offers to us. We can see that in an old married couple. This love is a picture of the profound mystery of Christ and the church. So that takes us to our second point. Why marriage? Well, it's God's way for us to leave and to cleave. What's required for a marriage to be established well? You have to leave and you have to cleave. Genesis 2:24 in the King James Version, which we don't use here often, but allow me to read this to you. "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Cleave. In order for us to experience marriage to the degree and depth that God designed, in order for our marriages to thrive, in order for us to truly be one flesh, we have to leave and we have to cleave.
So let's talk a little bit about the leaving. So if a couple hopes to become one flesh, they must first leave. This is separating from one framework of relationship, our family of origin, in order to establish relationship with another. They must pull themselves away from the parents and extended family. And here's a little bit of what it looked like for us. Early on in our marriage, we literally, physically, and geographically left our family of origin. We moved from Vancouver, left everything behind, and moved to Saskatoon. We arrived there, pregnant with our first. Aw, look at her now. Pregnant with our first. And when we came back 4 years later, we were now a family of almost five. And our parents on both sides had now become friends. They were co-journeyers with us in this journey of life. And that happened because of the time and the distance that was between us. They were still our parents. We still respected them. They still spoke into our lives. But we had had the opportunity to establish our own family. This is important if the two are to really become one. In some families, we know that in-laws meddle, and sometimes this holds us back. Or maybe there's people that come and continually rescue and fix situations for the couple so that they aren't facing things on their own. They're not growing those muscles in their relationship. They are being rescued at every turn. They do not become mature. They do not become one flesh because they haven't left. Leaving emotionally is necessary as well. Dan and I also experienced a bit of a spiritual leaving. We took the things of faith that our parents had taught us, and we used them to establish a new spiritual relationship as husband and wife. We used the things that we had learned to establish a new household. We took those things of faith and we passed them on to our children. We shifted from obeying as children to honoring our parents. We honored them by taking the things that they had taught us, applying them to our lives, allowing us to become mature and to grow in our faith, to become one as a couple, and to establish our own household. And now, in the fullness of time and because of the goodness of God, all of our children are moved out and married. Yay! And they're doing the same thing, establishing homes of faith.
So once we've left, we need to cleave. Cleave, what a bizarre word. Cleave. Cleaving is holding on. Picture a rocky cliff, and you've fallen over the side, and you're hanging on to the cliff for dear life. You are cleaving to the rock, okay? You're gluing yourself to that rock, because if you let go, you're toast. You're gone. Cleaving is being glued to somebody else. And cleaving, in the biblical sense, means glued to one person. No more. The fidelity of the two of you together. It's constantly pursuing hard after that person. It's for that person becoming a lover, a protector, a mate, a friend, an encourager, a helper, a child raiser, a challenger, a partner, a provider, a nurturer, a chef, a launderer, a caregiver, a comedian, a host, a landscaper, a healer, etc., etc., etc. It's being all of those things. And each couple, as they cleave, need to work out what kind of part of each of those roles they're going to play. Each one is different, each couple is different, but part of cleaving is working out how all of these things work for us because we are glued together. That means we work together. Cleaving has to be done then in submission. And you're going, wait a minute, I thought this was about sex and marriage and stuff. We're going to get to that. But the leaving and cleaving and submission lead to something that allows us to do that last bit well. So let me get there. Cleaving has to be done in submission and in sacrifice to each other. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21 to 33, first starts off with something for everybody, whether you're married or not. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Why? Because we're the body of Christ. Because that's how we behave. Because that's what the body of Christ does. That's how we represent Jesus, who, being very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, right? Even to death on a cross. So then it goes on in that passage, verse 25, husbands, love your wives. Sorry, verse 22, wives, submit to your own husbands. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives. Verse 28, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. And then the whole sentence about being one flesh together. So my question specifically for those of you who are wives here today, do you love your husband? Do you respect your husband? Do you pursue hard after your husband? And husbands, do you love your wife? Will you give up everything for her? Are you pursuing hard after your wife? That's cleaving. That's what it means. And you have to have left well in order to cleft well. That should be a bumper sticker, maybe. Yeah, yeah. You have to. And some of us are still dealing with leaving issues 10, 15, 20, 30 years into marriage. There's a guy named Robertson McQuilkin. He was a president of Columbia International University in South Carolina. He was involved in missions work in Japan and did all sorts of things for the kingdom all over the place. And after 22 years, he left being president of the college to care for his wife. His wife had been struck with Alzheimer's, and I want you to see a little video, but look at this relationship. This was in his resignation speech that he gave at the school. Look at this guy pursuing his wife, cleaving to his wife.
I haven't in my life experienced easy decision-making on major decisions, but one of the simplest and clearest decisions I've had to make is this one, because circumstances dictated it. Muriel, now, in the last couple of months, seems to be almost happy when with me, and almost never happy when not with me. In fact, she seems to feel trapped, become very fearful, sometimes almost terror. And when she can't get to me, there could be anger. She's in distress. But when I'm with her, she's happy and contented. And so I must be with her at all times. And you see, it's not only that I promise in sickness and in health, till death do us part, and I'm a man of my word. But as I have said, I don't know with this group, but I've said publicly, it's the only fair thing. She sacrificed for me for 40 years to make my life possible. So, if I cared for her for 40 years, I'd still be in debt. However, there's much more. It's not that I have to, it's that I get to. I love her very dearly, and you can tell it's not easy to talk about. She's a delight. It's a great honor to care for such a wonderful person.
Is it Kleenex?
Dab, dab, dab. I don't have to, I get to. So the third point, why marriage? Because God made us to be intimate. In the garden, think of Eve and Adam, naked and unashamed. They had a mystical, physical, and spiritual reunion. And hence in Genesis 2, 23 and 25, we see the man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And one flesh means deeply connected. Connected in all areas, emotional, spiritual, physical, even as Adam and Eve were in the garden, naked and unashamed. Nakedness requires vulnerability. The only environment safe enough to risk this is in the security and lifelong fidelity of a marriage relationship. And that's God's design.
So when my old workmate at the school board belittled long-term committed marriages, he was showing a very sad and very profound ignorance about who God is and who God made humans to be. And he also showed a profound ignorance about what intimacy was. We are made for intimacy, and there are no shortcuts to true intimacy. My workmate's life was a corruption. The lifestyle he held was a corruption of how God designed us to be. And it's never for him ever going to result in any kind of intimacy beyond a little bit of physical stuff. It'll never do that. Because he's doing it in such a way that's against God's design for us. True intimacy in marriage comes when you forsake all others. Fidelity. In the covenant of marriage and in vulnerability, submit to your spouse for the long haul, for the life thing. Why is that important? Well, intimacy needs time. It needs lots of time. Now, this begs a rather uncomfortable question for somebody like me or my wife or others perhaps who've been married for more than a couple of decades. Nobody wants to actually ask the question, but you know you're all thinking about it, right? This embarrassing question? Yeah, my daughter, you can plug your ears right now, actually. This part is not for you. Is married sex boring the longer you're together? Right? I mean, we think about that. I remember as a young married person, I wondered, well, I wonder what this is going to be like in 30 years. Well, 30 years later, here we are. Well, let me tell you something. I can say that while there are seasons that every marriage goes through, there's ups and downs and there's trials and struggles. If I were to compare our physical relationship when we were first married to our physical relationship right now, it is way better now. I mean, way better. Miles. Now, I thought it was really good when we first got married, and it actually really was quite fantastic. But it's better. It is way better. And I don't know how to explain it better than this, to say that when we first got married, we didn't know each other really, really, really well. We weren't really, really, really intimate. We knew each other, and we were intimate, but we hadn't grown in that. Over time, our intimacy has grown. Our feeling of safety in the face of our vulnerability has been strengthened. It's positively affected our physical experience. And our physical experience together, growing and getting better, has affected our intimacy and our feeling of safety and trust with each other. It's an upward spiral, and it gets better. Somebody came to me after at Robson Park and said, it gets better than that, man. And I'm like, whoa, he's been married longer than I have. Okay, so I'm going to listen to him. Those that have left and cleft, forsaking everyone else, are in the relationship to give to their spouse. When two people are together in a relationship and you're both there to give to your spouse, that can't be ever bad. That can't be ever bad. Much of the satisfaction in intimate sexual relationship comes from the fact that you are privileged with pleasing someone not only who you are loving more deeply all the time, but you're getting to know them more intimately all the time, and with whom you can be vulnerable without fear. And it is awesome. Mark my words.
Is it warm in here?
So how do we develop this intimate sexual relationship with your spouse? Three quick points on that. So firstly, work to develop intimacy in every other area of your relationship. This is foundational. When we first fell in love, prior to marriage, we began to develop that agape kind of love. God purposed for us to keep the eros part of it till after marriage. So the foundation for our relationship began to build before that time. We learned about each other. We fell in love with all kinds of different things about each other without muddying the waters by throwing in the physical sexual piece until it was God's time. So in that, we challenge you, be a student of your spouse. Learn what they love. Learn what makes them laugh. Learn when to leave them alone. Learn how to make them thrive. What is it that will make your partner become the person that God intended them to be? Be that for them. Be their biggest cheerleader. Secondly, be aware that life happens. We will all face emotional, relational difficulties, both inside and outside of marriage. It just happens. Stuff happens. Issues will come up at work. There'll be health issues. There'll be babies. There's child raising. There's sleepless nights. There's arguments. There's sickness, crises of all kinds. But as an intimate couple, we can face these together. And in that, we'll be growing deeper and closer to one another as we learn to be supportive and vulnerable, encouraging, loving, humble, submissive to one another. And thirdly, we're going to need to work at intimacy. Relationships are hard. Intimacy is hard in any kind of relationship. And marriage doesn't guarantee intimacy, but it does facilitate or allow an opportunity for intimacy that's deeper by far than so many other types of human experience.
You guys have given us a lot of grace today because you're all in different places, right? We're all in different places, some married, some not, some young, some old. So thank you for giving us that grace and allowing us to talk directly about aspects of being married and also being the bride of Christ. Marriage between a man and a woman is a profound reflection of the image of God. It is the biblical picture of Christ's love for his bride, the church. And just think about it. For those who are married, our spouse will know more about God as our intimacy grows together. And we as a church will know more about God as married couples' intimacy grows together.
And because of that, we can then be a witness. In our marriages, we witness to the reality of God, a God that is alive and faithful and presence in the midst of this culture that has no clue about a godly, committed marriage. If marriage isn't held in high esteem by the church, it will never hope to have a positive impact on the culture. The church is the strongest foundation for marriage because it's the picture of Christ and his bride. It's a place of redemption. It's a place that demonstrates the kind of love that God has always had for his people. The people that he called, the people that he covenanted with. That's marriage, and that is the picture of the church.
If you're married, Sherry and I hope that you've been challenged today to press into your marriage, to pursue hard after your spouse, but also to pursue hard after Christ. If you're not married, we hope you're challenged as part of this community to help build the marriages that are here. Because marriages are a picture of Christ, and we learn from that. And as we help build those marriages, we benefit from it as well. Because together, we reflect the image of God, male and female, and we're all part of that. For all of us, those outside of the church will know we're Christians by our love for each other. For those of us who are married, they will know we're Christians by our love for our spouse. So may we all grow deeper in love with Christ as we grow together in every different kind of community. Could we pray together?
On Mark's and my